Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us on this gorgeous Monday. We're going to talk today about tipping, particularly in the restaurant industry, where servers generally are paid below minimum wage in recognition of the practice of tipping. A movement to ban tipping has gained steam over the last few years. Proponents, including presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, say tipping leaves employees economically vulnerable. And some restaurants are experimenting with the idea of banning tipping. Last fall, for instance, high-profile New York restaurateur Danny Meyer, who runs Union Square Cafe and a dozen other restaurants, announced he would eliminate tipping across the board and raise prices at his restaurants. The no tips movement has been fueled in part by minimum wage hikes in some states. Facing the prospect of having to pay wait staff more, some restaurants are opting to ban tips and raise prices. It's also an attempt to address the fact that because of tips, servers and bartenders tend to make much more money than kitchen workers. How would eliminating tips affect servers? Would service at restaurants suffer? The restaurant business is a risky one. Can restaurant owners handle the added salary burden? My guests today come at these questions from very different perspectives. They both wrote op-eds on the tipping question in the Wall Street Journal this year. Jay Zagorski is an economist and research scientist at The Ohio State University in Columbus. He's a proponent of eliminating tipping, and he joins us by phone. Welcome to Midday.
Good to be on your show.
It's good to have you. And Michael Saltzman is research director at the Employment Policies Institute. He opposes getting rid of tips, and he joins us from the let me be precise. He opposes getting rid of tipping, and he joins us from the studios of WAMU in Washington. I'm so glad you could join us.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Jay Zagorski, Americans have been tipping for more than a century. Why stop now?
One of the problems of tipping is that people who earn tips, the restaurant workers you were just referring to, have no idea how much they're going to earn each shift. They're playing a constant gambling game. When you go into work, you have no idea whether it's going to be a good day or a bad day. Now, this is no problem if you have a lot of savings or you work in a very well-paying job. But I think, as Michael will agree, most of the people who work in the restaurant industry are not in well-paying jobs. So we're putting incredible amounts of risk on some of the people who can least afford this risk.
I'm going to pick up what you just said, assuming Michael Saltzman's agreement on the level at which servers in restaurants are paid. But first, Michael, let me ask you just to give an overview of what is your position on tipping and why.
Sure. My position on tipping, if I had to summarize it in a line, would be, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. If tipping is something that we know from public opinion surveys is overwhelmingly favored by customers. Over 80% of restaurant customers surveyed would oppose doing away with the current tipping system. It's also favored by servers. In polling data from servers, one of the top reasons they work in the restaurant industry is the quick availability of income via tips. And I don't agree with Professor Zagorski that these are poor-paying jobs. I mean, Census Bureau data suggests that on average, servers are earning about $13 an hour with tips included, which is not quite, but almost double the federal minimum wage. And in many local markets, in New York City, for instance, the average across the five boroughs is $25. So I think they're good jobs that pay well, that provide flexibility, and they also provide quick income. And so I think the biggest issue that we have today is a handful of states that don't want to treat tips as income earned on the job. And I don't think the problem is the status quo.
Well, let me zero in, as I said I would. You just said, you cited Census Bureau that servers average $13 an hour. Professor Zagorski, I've seen Bureau of Labor Statistics data, which is, I think, where a lot of us think we get information about how many people are at work and what they're making, and that's more like $9 an hour. Without getting us tremendously lost in statistics, can you tell us where the difference comes from and why you think servers are not well paid?
So there's many different sources of data, and one of the problems, without sitting here having an argument over the next hour over whether it's the Bureau of Statistics we should focus on.
I want to assure listeners that that's not what this hour is going to be.
Right. Instead, a lot of these bartenders and restaurant workers are being paid in cash. And the question is, how much are they truly earning or not? So it's very hard to know in a cash business what people are either reporting or what they're actually getting paid. And this brings me to a second point, that if we don't know how much people are actually getting paid, for people who are paid in a traditional manner, money being deposited to your bank account, if restaurant workers are not reporting these cash tips or bartenders are not reporting these cash tips, they're not paying taxes on it. So they're getting an extra benefit, which is why Michael suggested that many servers don't want to leave this method. But the rest of us actually have to pay higher taxes because servers and restaurant workers who aren't paying taxes on their cash tips are basically getting a little bit of a free ride in the system.
That is Jay Zagorski, economist and research scientist at The Ohio State University. Here on Midday on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about tips and whether that practice of tipping is past its prime, whether it should be changed, and if so, why. Also with us is Michael Saltzman, research director at the Employment Policies Institute. And we're taking your calls. What do you think about this? Do you wait on tables? How do you feel about the idea of getting rid of tips in favor of a better hourly wage? You can call us at 410-662-8780, or you can email us at midday@wypr.org. I'm hoping that one of you can help me understand something. I have either been had the misfortune or the luck never to have been a waitress, and so I don't quite understand how it's supposed to work. There's a federal, a separate kind of minimum wage for people who get tips. The federal minimum is $2.13 an hour. In Maryland, Maryland has chosen to raise that a bit to $3.63 an hour. But the idea is that every worker in this country, involved in interstate commerce at least, is supposed to be able to get the federal minimum wage of $7.25. So, Michael Saltzman, tell me how it works. If I'm in a restaurant and I know I'm not getting the equivalent of $7.25, what do I do?
So, the way the law works right now is that in most states, with the exception of seven states, in most states, servers are guaranteed the same minimum wage as any other employee. So, federal minimum wage law is that there's a base wage, and that with your tips included, you have to earn at least $7.25 an hour. As I mentioned, census data, and we could actually talk about a couple other data sources, but there's multiple data sources that suggest an average of about $13 an hour. And to go back to a point that Professor Zagorski made, the California Restaurant Association actually estimated last year that about 90% of restaurant payments today are made by credit or debit card. So I think today especially, I think there are very few restaurant owners, either small scale or large scale, who you would talk to who don't have a very good idea of what employees are earning in tips. And so it's a legal requirement. Just like there's a legal requirement to pay employees at least the minimum wage, there's a legal requirement to make sure tipped employees earn at least the minimum wage with tips included.
Okay, I was just trying to ask a more practical question of, do they settle up at the end of a shift, at the end of the week, at the end of the month? I mean, where comes the point where I take your point that even the data you look at says, on average, servers are above the federal minimum wage. But if somebody isn't, I'm not quite clear how it works. Jay Zagorski?
So in general, they're supposed to look at it weekly, as I understand it. I also have not been a waiter or a bartender in my earlier life before becoming a professor. They're supposed to look at it and make sure that when they take the $2.13 an hour across the nation, that the tips round everything up. But there's a couple of problems with this. As Michael just said, that many restaurant owners are now shifting to credit cards. And the way the law is written is that if you leave, say, a $10 tip and charge it to your credit card, the restaurant now can subtract the cost of the credit card payment. So most businesses are charged about 3% to run credit card payments. So you think you're giving them a $10 tip, but then the restaurant subtracts the actual cost of running through that credit card payment from the tip. So restaurant workers are getting a little bit less. And I'll agree with Michael that $13 an hour is okay. It's fine. But what we're talking about here is not the average, but we're talking about the fluctuation. That you could have some great days as a restaurant worker or some bad days. And more importantly, the amount people tip is not based just on the server, but it's also based on, for example, the cook, the busboy, the busgirl. There's lots of things that go into people's experience in a restaurant, whether they view that that was a worthy restaurant to give a worthy server to give a large tip or a small tip. And the server only has a small amount of that under their control.
And that obviously is a big part of this debate, is the disparity between the front of the house, where the employees, the servers, the bartenders are tipped, and the back of the house, the kitchen staff, to some degree the busboys, those who do not get tips. Michael Saltzman, how do you address that disparity?
Well, I actually think in many cases the disparity is caused, and the disparity is actually the worst in states that don't follow the IRS in treating tips as income. If you look at states like Washington State, Oregon, and California, compare it to New York, the differential between the front of the house and the back of the house is enormous, because in a place like San Francisco, for instance, you have to pay, a restaurant there has to pay their employees, essentially their best paid employees in the house who are walking out on a, let's say, a weekend with a couple hundred dollars in tips in their pockets. They have to give them a pay increase when the minimum wage goes up. So you're paying them $13 an hour plus their tips, which leaves less money left over for the rest of the staff. And so the dynamic that has really created is that it's forced, in essence, some businesses to get creative in how they think about tipping. I mean, the reason a business would consider doing away with tipping is because tipping essentially would free up that money that would otherwise be going to the employee and allow the business to use it to help fundraisers across the entire staff. As you can imagine, those servers are not thrilled about that, because it means less take-home pay for them. And so I think the problem is actually being caused by a law that sort of perversely treats tips in a way that not even the state revenue agencies treat tips. I mean, those agencies all treat tips as a form of income or another job. But kind of as an odd quirk of labor law, the servers' tips aren't earned as such. And I think it's important, too, to kind of recognize when we talk about the averages of what people earn, you know, we've actually done polling data, and we've polled servers a couple of times, and there's also been a separate survey done via ORC International, which is CNN's pollster, and they were presented with an option of, you know, basically, you know, a $15 an hour guaranteed wage or the current tipped status quo. And in all of these surveys, about 60% said they preferred the status quo. So I think even if you're averaging things out, I think they're still doing quite well.
Okay, we need to take a quick break here, and I want to pursue both of those questions, both what the public thinks about the idea of tipping or not tipping, what servers think about it, and what it means for the rest of the folks who work in the restaurant. You can join this conversation. As a customer, how do you feel about tipping? Would you prefer a flat bill that required no tip, or do you like having the ability to make a choice about how much you tip? You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about tipping and whether or not restaurants should ban it. My guests are Jay Zagorski, economist and research scientist at The Ohio State University, and Michael Saltzman, research director at the Employment Policies Institute. What do you think? What are your tipping habits? Do you tip differently depending on the service, or do you always give the same percentage? Do you have kind of a default tip that you go to? You can call us at 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780, or email us midday@wypr.org. Jay Zagorski, we were talking before the break about this whole challenge for so many restaurants to make sure that the kitchen staff gets some of this incentive, gets some of the money that that customers pay when they're pleased with service. How can a restaurant pay a waiter how can a restaurant pay a waiter as much as they now make in tips, and also pay the equivalent wage to the kitchen staff if tips are stopped?
That's a really hard question, Sheila, of how to change the system without actually making any changes to anybody right now. If you're asking my opinion, one of the reasons why tipping has evolved is because of this minimum wage law that allows restaurant workers to be paid sub-minimum, $2.13 an hour. And in my opinion, by eliminating this sub-minimum and just allowing all restaurant workers to be like any other worker, will slowly reduce the impact of tipping over time and shift most restaurants to a fixed wage model. But before you start taking phone calls, what I really want to talk about, another point, is that tipping is very confusing for customers. Yes, Michael has come up with a number of surveys that suggest that customers like tipping, but that's because it's well known. The problem is, while it's well known, no one can agree on what standard tips are. Is tipping 15%, but when you're in a big city like Baltimore or New York, you pay 18 or 20%? Do you tip on the liquor? Do you not tip on the liquor? Is it included tax, not included tax? For many customers, tipping is very hard because you're being asked to judge each worker's performance. When I go to a restaurant, I want food. I don't want to have to be a manager.
But that is, I think, exactly why we hear from some customers, perhaps not all, that they like the power that the system of tipping gives them. Let's talk to Robert, who's called us from Baltimore. Robert, welcome to Midday. Robert?
I just wanted to make the point that I think this debate mostly is about taxable revenue, because I've worked as a server, and pretty much if you're a server, you know what you're going to make day to day, first shift, second shift. And there are laws that say you have to claim at least 10% of your sales. So, you know, although most servers don't claim everything they make, they have to claim at least 10% of their sales, whether they make it or not.
So you're saying the government assumes and counts as your income 10%
revenue, you know, that people are trying to get to. Because I know no server that would want to get a static pay.
Robert, I appreciate your calling us. Jay Zagorski, you've been making the argument that the system of tipping makes the income of servers so variable. And Robert says, as a server, that wasn't his experience. He had a pretty good idea what he was going to make on any particular shift.
I would say that what happened is, over time, we now have a group of bartenders and restaurant servers who are able to handle variable pay. If you can't handle variable pay, then you probably won't want a job in the restaurant industry as a server.
So you still think it's the case that the pay is variable? Michael Salzman, do you have any observations about this? You actually have worked as a server, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. So I've worked as a server in the restaurant industry for many years. And, you know, I guess I'd make a couple of observations. I mean, I think the first is, it's to your first question you raised earlier about how does a restaurant sort of square the circle if it wants to get rid of tips and still make servers whole? The answer to that is that they often can't. And that's why we've seen in a number of these restaurants that have eliminated tipping, you had servers leave. A number of them have then kind of undone that experiment, because basically, you know, if you want to make a server whole, you have to guarantee a wage of, let's say, at least $25 an hour, which requires raising menu prices to such a level where even higher income customers in places like San Francisco are going to recoil. And to the question of sort of a pay guarantee, the interesting thing is there's actually been some attempts to create a new category of employees, sort of a highly tipped category of employees. In California, for instance, there was a bill introduced by a Democratic legislator out of Anaheim who basically said that if a restaurant could guarantee that employees earned at least $15 an hour in tips and their base pay, then they basically received a forward freeze in any increase in the base pay. So it was an attempt.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. They would basically do what?
They basically, if a server earned at least $15 an hour in their tips and their base pay, if a restaurant could guarantee that, then instead of paying the higher minimum wage in California going forward, where it's rising up to 15, the restaurant could continue to pay 10. making up the difference in tips. So basically, the restaurants had the opportunity to say, well, look, if we'll guarantee that someone earns at least $15 an hour on a regular basis, and in exchange for that, you count at least $5 an hour towards tips. Even that kind of proposal, though, was basically criticized heavily by labor unions who are invested in kind of a status quo where tips aren't treated as income. So I think there are options out there for this category of highly tipped employees. I'm just not so sure labor groups and others are interested in that kind of compromise.
That is Michael Saltzman, Research Director at the Employment Policies Institute, here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, and also joining us by phone is Jay Zagorski, economist and research scientist at The Ohio State University. We are, as you hear, talking about tipping, whether it's a good system, whether it's a system that ought to be changed. You can join the conversation with an email to midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us at 410-662-8780. I want to read an email we got from Michael and pair that with a phone call from someone who's called us. Michael wrote us, as a former bar owner, I felt tipping encouraged bartenders to overpour and give away drinks in order to get better tips. This can be mitigated with monitoring inventory and other things, but I thought it would be much easier to give bonuses on busy nights to make up for all the extra effort I would hope to get from the staff. So there's Michael, a former bar owner, saying he didn't think the system of tipping was fair to him, and that it basically encouraged dishonesty. We have a phone call from Lorenzo, who seems to have a different idea about tipping. Lorenzo,
Hi.
Welcome
how are
to
you?
The show. How are you?
Good. So let's, as I'm listening to the conversation, let's start with what is the basic premise of tipping? It is to reward, those who do a great job and impress people, and it is to and for folks who don't, they don't get much of a reward. I've been a commissioned salesperson for 35 years now. I have a son who has been a server going on 10 years now. He's a server for a chain, not for some big luxurious restaurant, but for a very popular chain. And I sent him to school to do something else, by the way, and he never gravitated to that. He worked as a server while he was in college, and he just stayed there, and I, much to my dismay. But I gotta tell you, I am so proud of my boy. He does a great job. He can pinpoint how much money he's going to make every week. I gotta tell you, I got another boy who's has what's supposedly considered a better job, and he's asked me for a little help. My son that's a server has never asked me for any help. He's always managed to take care of his own business. He's very proud of what he does. He's always telling me about customers that come in asking for him, how many he can handle big tables. They have surveys by the customers who give their opinion of their server, and my son just is always bragging about how many how many letters he's gotten. As a matter of fact, the corporate office has letters about him. And as a matter of fact, he works in the corporate-owned restaurant.
Lorenzo,
so, he has managed to carve out a good living. He has managed to be a great server, and he does a good job. Those who are not good at it, then they don't do that. This fairness argument, this
Lorenzo,
life is not
fair. I get your point. I appreciate your making it. Jay Zagorski, Lorenzo basically says a tip is like
a
commission.
You should be very proud of your son. Cornell University, however, did research, and they actually asked people to rate their meals on a variety of scales, just like your son is getting back. And they found, some servers were getting stellar reviews, other servers were getting poor reviews, and the amount of tips had no relationship between servers and outside third-party evaluations of the actual service. So this suggests to me that the tipping model is broken, that people do, when asked, evaluate service at high, medium, and low levels, but the amount of tips they give did not seem to be related to those particular evaluations.
I want to pull Mel into this conversation. She's calling us from Havre de Grace with, I think, a different view. Mel, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello.
This is a lot more complicated than I thought. I hadn't heard the beginning of the conversation. But I like to tip. I don't judge the person on every aspect because I know they make horrible income, in my estimation. I'm for a minimum wage. And then tipping should be like a bonus for extra service, extra consideration when they're waiting on you. I don't tip if somebody is rude. I'm not going to give a minimum tip if somebody is rude to me. And I know the difference between rudeness and just maybe lack of attention, that kind of thing. I don't count that in. I tip them. But rudeness, I'm not going to tip for it. But I do believe in a minimum wage.
Mel, I appreciate your calling. And Michael Saltzman, I want to turn to you with sort of all these comments. We heard from Lorenzo about how he thinks tipping works as a commission and reflects the service. And Mel says she counts on being able to tip to be able to reflect service. But we heard Jay Zagorski citing research that it really is not a very efficient way to give incentives to workers.
Yeah, so, you know, we did a series of focus groups earlier this year with both restaurant employees and customers in various markets on both coasts and also in the middle of the country. And something interesting that observed from that, especially when we then sort of paired that later on with broader statistical surveys, is that customers do tend to have a set tip that they give. On the coast, it's more likely to be in the 20-25% range as a base tip. In the middle of the country, it's more likely to sort of be between 15-20%. You start with that base tip as a server, and then you can either exceed that or go a little bit below that if you've provided very poor service. I don't think we ran into anyone who was stiffed an employee, but even if someone did not get a tip, again, to go back to our original conversation, tips are income, and employers are legally obligated if an employee is getting stiffed to make sure they're still earning the minimum wage. And to Lorenzo's point, though, I think the point Lorenzo makes is something, especially as we talk to employees in focus groups, one of the reasons why employees we spoke with overwhelmingly did not support doing away with tips is because they wanted that opportunity. They felt like they were they had the opportunity to go and to shine, and on a merit-based perspective, not just get a 15% tip, but get a 20 or 25% tip based on the great service they provided. And they were also not too keen on this idea that they might be working with coworkers who maybe weren't doing as good of a job, who would then be guaranteed the same wage they were. They liked the idea that tips allowed them to go above and beyond and to be rewarded for that in their income as a form of income that, again, raises them quite a bit above the minimum wage.
Jay Zagorski, what about that?
The idea that
servers themselves like it.
Yeah, many people are concerned that if we do away with tips, there's no incentive for people to work hard in the restaurant business. And as an academic, I'm very fortunate to be able to travel quite widely. And I've recently been in Japan, where there was no tipping, New Zealand, also a country with almost no tipping in the restaurant industry, and I thought the service was almost identical to the level in the United States. There were some meals excellent, some meals that weren't very good. But these were workers who were all paid at higher rates, and there was no tipping.
Let's talk to Brian, who has called us from Baltimore. Brian, welcome to Midday.
Hello, how are you?
Just great. You?
Good, good. Just a comment. Now, my wife, I work in the federal government. I'm a GS-9 employee. I don't make a ton of money, but my wife works in a niche restaurant. Not a restaurant that's a public big corporation, but she makes just as much money as I do, and I really don't see her having too much of a tax benefit than I do. It's probably all the way you claim taxes, but if they went to a system where everybody gets paid per hour, I mean, yeah, there'll probably be a revolt in those niche places, one of the higher end places. Not so much maybe the corporate owned places, but I would say see a big revolt into the places where there's it's like a more of a mom and pop.
So are you basically saying that tipping, the way tipping works and how fair or unfair it is to workers totally depends on the level of restaurant, the more expensive restaurants being better for servers, the chain restaurants not so much?
Oh, absolutely, but it's also harder to get into those places. I mean, you probably have to tip for a while to get into those niche places. And on someone's reference that's been in the industry maybe 10, 15 years and doing it that way. Another comment I would like to make is people usually tip on the server. I mean, if they got bad service as far as the food, they're going to tip by the way the cook prepared their food. But other than that, you're tipping on the waitress is the presenter. She presents the whole entire atmosphere. So, I mean, if you get a bad service from her, you're going to get a bad tip. But if you get a stellar service from that server, it's been plenty of times me and my wife's been up in nice places, and you know, we still tip just as good because the server was good. The food might not have been good, but we still give the same tip, but we probably won't go back to that place.
I appreciate your calling, Brian. Thank you. Jay Zagorski, we're going to need to take a break in a minute. Is there a quick comment you have about what Brian said?
All I'm saying is that we should not pay workers less. The bill that the customer should receive should be pretty much the exact same bill. It's really how we distribute it is all I'm talking about.
Okay, we're going to pick up on that when we come back. We're talking about tipping this hour on Midday, and you're welcome to join the conversation with an email to midday@wypr.org or a phone call to 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about tipping, particularly in restaurants, and whether it ought to be done away with. I'm speaking with Jay Zagorski, economist and research scientist at The Ohio State University. And also with us is Michael Saltzman, research director at the Employment Policies Institute. You can join this conversation. Do you work in the back of the house at a restaurant, maybe as a cook? What's your take on this idea of getting rid of tips? Is it fair that servers get tips when other staff don't? Do you think we ought to pay some attention to the idea of getting rid of the custom of tipping? Our email address is midday@wypr.org. Our phone number is 410-662-8780. Michael Saltzman, some of our callers have raised the idea of it works a lot differently at high-end restaurants than at a lot of other restaurants. How do you approach that question?
Well, I think it is reflected in the data that, you know, again, if you look at the numbers for New York City for a tipped employee there in a place like San Francisco, you know, the tip average is maybe $25 or $30 an hour or higher compared to the national rate of $13 an hour. But I think that if proponents are looking for a solution, like for instance in California, again, I think the idea I kind of spelled out earlier of having this new category of highly tipped employees should be able to resolve any concerns there. But I also think that the point the professor made right before the break about how we're distributing the bill, I think it's an important thing to think about because restaurant customers, I think, more so than customers in many other industries, are some of the most price-sensitive people. And so what we see is that in a place like California, where you have restaurants like Zazi in San Francisco that's gone to a tip-included model, well, that means you pay $19 for, you know, three pancakes. And if you go to Lane Splitter Pizza, you can get living wage pizza for $31 with pepperoni and onion. And so customers tend to recoil at prices that are this high when the tip is included, both because they lose the control to reward good service, and it's also just a much higher price going into it. And so I think that's the reason why in some markets now that have experimented with these really dramatic jumps in a tipped wage, New York most recently, you've actually seen businesses reduce staffing levels, you know, stop hiring busboys, or in some cases close entirely, because just raising their prices, it's not as simple as doing that because they're going to lose the volume and that's going to be the same as closing.
I'm very glad you raised that. And I'd like to turn to Jay Zagorski, who is an economist, to help me understand that, because it seems like ultimately everything we're talking about is how much money would need to come from restaurant patrons to pay for the food and to pay for the service. And so I hear about sticker shock, and I'm perfectly willing to believe that I would be susceptible to it. But how do we solve that problem?
Restaurant business has a little bit of bait and switch. For example, when watching football games on the weekend, you see some of these national restaurant chains advertising, you know, come in for dinner and, you know, get two dinners for $19.95. But when you actually get there and you have to pay for the tax, the tip, and the drinks, suddenly the bill seems to have doubled. So people are a little bit myopic.
Except the system that we've been talking about tells us going into a restaurant not to believe, not to expect just the price on the menu, that there's going to be a tip. So if we get rid of that, isn't it just making it that much more clear? We seem to have lost Professor Zagorski. We will try to get him back. Michael Saltzman, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's a, you know, I think the professor just described it as myopic or a bait and switch. I think what you just described there is the reason why the status quo is so great. I mean, it allows restaurants to keep price low. It allows customers to reward good service. The objection I've heard sometimes labor proponents make is that they can't believe that a restaurant is asking customers to pay employees salaries, but that's how it is in every for-profit business that I'm aware of. I mean, in any for-profit business, customers are ultimately providing the money to pay employees' salaries. The full-service restaurants, I think, just have a situation that I think uniquely works for both the restaurants and the employees.
Well, and of course, we haven't yet succeeded in getting Jay Zagorski back with us, but I have heard him, I have read his writings that he doesn't see why he, as a customer, needs to be trying to figure out what the pay scale of the server should be. I'll let him make that point when we get him back. Meanwhile, let's talk to Maggie, who has called us from Baltimore. Maggie, welcome to Midday.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make a point. It was raised before that in other countries that servers do not make tips and that you're not expected to tip. I've been a server in the United States, and I did it for years, and then I chose a profession that took me overseas. So I've also dined out in other countries, in Europe as well as other places. And one thing that always was impressed upon me is that when I was a server in the United States, it was always a gateway job. It was something that I was doing. You know, I bartended in college. I waited tables to supplement income. Whereas in Europe, especially, servers are viewed as having that as their career, and they take pride in it, and it's something that they grow with. So it's not just this entry-level job. And so I think tipping for us and then trying to get it to look like the European model where you include tips and salaries into a regular pay scale is almost premature, because I don't think we're there yet in the United States to view this as a career.
And so Maggie, you're basically saying we, because of the way Americans look at the restaurant business and the people who serve us, we need tips as part of the system?
Yeah, I think it's great because, you know, at the end of my serving career, if you want to call it that, you know, I was working in a high-end restaurant, and I made more than I did when I opted for a salaried job. And I was also able to, you know, kind of view that as, you know, an evolution of my, you know, I was getting better and better at what I did, much like the son that was talked about, where he gets rave reviews and all this stuff, is able to manage a lot of tables. And that's kind of how you're able to elevate yourself in the serving world, is that, you know, you work in better restaurants, and that, you know, is viewed as a career in some ways. But
Maggie, thanks for making that point. Jay Zagorski, we have you back with us?
I'm back.
Great.
Sorry for that.
Were you? And it's probably not your fault. Were you able to hear Maggie's point that when she lived in Europe, she saw serving as more of a career path than it is here, and she thinks that's one of the reasons that tipping makes sense here.
I did hear her point, and to me, what I was thinking when I heard her was that in Europe, you're getting a fixed salary. You know how much you're going to be paid. And one of the things that I see in the United States in restaurants is that many servers probably don't like to worry about the tipping model. Why? Because many restaurants pool tips together. And if you're going to a restaurant, whether you realize it or not, that's pooling tips together, it's trying to move to the model that I'm suggesting, where workers are eliminating some of this risk. Because it's not just your actions, it's how everybody on average is doing on a given night.
It's teamwork. Michael Saltzman, how do you approach that?
So I think Maggie's point about tips and the role they play in the United States and allowing someone to improve, I think in that regard, I do think it's an important one, because the service industry and the restaurant industry, and from employees that we've spoken to, I think that's a characteristic of the industry that's not a it's not something that detracts from the industry. It's actually a feature. It's not a bug. And one of the actually most interesting things that we found when we surveyed and then spoke to both customers and then employees is that expectations of earnings actually aligned fairly closely. And so customers in a casual dining environment were expecting that employees, with tips included, were earning roughly about $12 an hour. In a fine dining environment with tips included, they expected they were earning about $15 an hour. And so when we match those up with the earnings that employees are reporting, sort of fine and casual dining, they line up quite well. So I don't think that we're in the kind of scenario that the professor spells out, where people have this sort of, they can't even predict what their earnings are from shift to shift. I actually think servers have a very good idea of how much they earn on a weekly basis and on average how much they earn on an hourly basis. And so I think they understand that, they appreciate it, and I think that's why they seek employment in the industry.
Ellen has called us from Baltimore. Ellen, welcome to Midday.
I just wanted to talk about the price point question that was raised.
Yeah.
You know, if they actually, you know, included the tip and the tax and everything, it would be, you know, no one would want to pay that. And that's only true if only some of the places are doing that. In Europe, everybody does it, so everyone's used to it. And it's nice to know in Europe when you're there that you're going in and this is what it's going to cost you. And, you know, but the problem here is that only some places do it. So the two pizza places next door to one another, if one's charging $10 and the other's charging $15 or $20, everyone's going to go to the $10.
Good point, Ellen. Let me ask you to address that, Professor Jay Zagorski. You think that we ought to get rid of tipping, but you mentioned it at one point a few minutes ago, the sort of gradual change it would take. How would you want to get fairly quickly to a system where customers expected the price of the service to be included in the price of the meal?
I think if you eliminated the sub-minimum wage of $2.13 an hour and just said that all restaurant employees had to be paid whatever the prevailing minimum wage is, that would force many restaurants all at the same price point to adopt the same types of paid policies.
Michael Saltzman, your reaction to that?
So I can tell you, if you eliminated the tip credit in federal law, what it would force restaurants to do is close. Because just so people understand, I mean, for a typical full-service restaurant, depending on the state you're in, labor costs may be 30 to 35% of your total expenses. And so eliminating the tip credit in law, not a sub-minimum wage, because, again, all employees are guaranteed at least a minimum wage, but eliminating the tip credit would mean more than a 400% increase in labor costs for these restaurants. And that's why in states that have pursued this approach...
There are seven or eight states, right, that require waitstaff to be paid the full minimum wage.
Yeah, that's right. There are some. And I think what we've seen from those states, both from the empirical research side, there was a study published a couple of years ago in the Southern Economic Journal that found a direct relationship after controlling for relevant economic factors between states that had raised and increased the minimum wage for tipped employees and reductions in restaurant employees. But also, I think anecdotally, I mean, we launched a website last year called Faces at 15, designed to track the overall impact of rising minimum wages. But we've picked up a lot of detail in there of these increases in the minimum wage for tipped employees. And so you had restaurants, Abbott Cellar is a good example. It was one of the top 100 restaurants in the city of San Francisco. Ended up closing last year, and it was one of a number that closed because it increased the minimum wage without accounting for tips. And so they, again, had to give their best paid employees a raise, and the numbers just didn't work because customers weren't going to pay prices that high. And so I think that's the dynamic that you run into, particularly in these markets that don't treat tips as income.
Jay Zagorski, we have just a minute or two left. Is tipping on its way out in the U.S.? Do you think we're headed to an end to tipping?
I don't think so. I think I'm in a minority right now. But I hope in a few years that more people come over to my side of the view.
Michael Salzman, you've been watching this debate pretty carefully. Where do you think it's headed? Because it is, as I think you mentioned earlier, tied up. The debate is to some extent tied up with the whole question of raising the minimum wage.
Yeah, so I think that there are two facets. I think on the cultural thing of eliminating tipping, we've seen a number of restaurants now that have eliminated it have been called it sort of a bad decision and have then gone back to the old route. And so I would imagine that's going to be around for a while. I think on this broad idea of eliminating the tips minimum wage, proponents of that actually haven't had much success. I mean, in Maryland, for instance, the Democratic legislature there raised the state minimum wage, but actually gave an unfavorable report to a separate effort to raise the tip minimum wage and eliminate the tip credit. So I think that when people understand who tipped employees are, how much they're earning, and that people are voluntarily in this industry, I don't think they're inclined to do away with a status quo that's working.
Well, I think the debate is going to continue, and I appreciate both of you giving us some insights into how to approach it. Michael Salzman, Research Director at the Employment Policies Institute, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And Jay Zagorski, economist and research scientist at The Ohio State University. Thank you for spending the hour with us.
It was a pleasure.
I'd also like to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today for Midday Guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. Features signature burgers, wings, steaks, jumbo lump crab cakes. Open for lunch and dinner with breakfast on the weekends on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. And thank you for listening. Tomorrow we'll talk to the author of a new book called The Boys of Dunbar about an extraordinary team of athletes in East Baltimore 35 years ago, their remarkable coach, and the impact they had on each other and on the city. That's tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cast. I hope you are enjoying this weather, and if you're celebrating the Muslim feast Eid al-Adha, Eid Mubarak.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.